My talk tonight is called Tending a Beautiful Garden. But first, before I get into that, I'm going to do a little sidetrack, and then we'll get back to the garden theme. And I want to begin my sidetrack by reading you a story, a true story. Some of you may have heard it before. And I'm going to leave it up to you to determine what the Dharma lesson is in the story, what the teaching is. And it's dated, it's New York Times, Sunday, July 5th, 1998. What follows is a transcript of the actual radio conversation between a U.S. naval ship and Canadian authorities off the coast of Newfoundland. Canadians, please divert your course 15 degrees to the south to avoid a collision. Americans, recommend you divert your course 15 degrees to the north to avoid a collision. Canadians, negative. You have to divert your course 15 degrees to the south to avoid a collision. Americans, this is the captain of a U.S. naval ship. I say again, divert your course. Canadians, no. I say again, you divert your course. Americans, this is the aircraft carrier USS Lincoln, the second largest ship in the U.S. state's Atlantic fleet. We are accompanied by three destroyers, three cruisers, and numerous support vessels. I demand that you change your course 15 degrees north. I say again, that's 15 degrees north. Or countermeasures will be undertaken to ensure the safety of this ship. Canadians, this is a lighthouse. Your call. That was a little bit of a test. We were talking today how first night at a retreat, sometimes it's a tough audience. Because about half the people are pretty out of it by the end of the first day. And you may be, some of you may actually feel that way. For some of you, it may have been a long, long, kind of tedious day. And some of you may feel like you're barely awake at this point, maybe barely hanging on. A little dull, drowsy, achy, irritable, what I call cranky in body and mind, bored perhaps, agitated, impatient, could be many things. And some percentage of you may actually feel pretty good right now, may feel relaxed and a kind of lightness of being here. And many of you are somewhere in between or both of those things at different times. Some of you may feel the adjustment to being here more in the body, in sort of the stiffness or difficulty in finding any posture that's comfortable. And some of you might find it more in the mind in terms of either sleepiness or agitation or whatever. I remember actually a number of first night talks. I mean, being in the audience, being one of the yogis, and just sort of sitting there, just sort of waiting it out until I could get into my bed, and just sort of that's all I could sort of think about what was next. But I want to say I wasn't about to miss the talk since it was the only entertainment of the day. And you haven't been here long enough to the point where, you know, watching a row of ants becomes really big entertainment. At other times, I really love the first. It's really variable, and it's different for everybody. Sometimes the first day for me would be quite relaxed, quite happy, so happy to be here, and the smells and the sounds and the quiet would be really wonderful. But then it might be the next day that I feel mired in the muck. So this is Mary Grace, actually. If you're new and you're struggling a bit and it feels difficult and kind of unpleasant for this first day, Mary Grace calls this the swamp. And I call it the bog mind as opposed to the big mind. And this is one of the most common experiences at the beginning of a retreat. So right now, wherever you are on the spectrum, I just want you to take a moment to actually drop in a bit to what are you experiencing right now? What is the actual direct experience you have are having right now? Of course, it's changing, it's flowing, it's evolving in some way. The sounds, all of your senses. We're sentient beings, that means we feel. The body has different, all kinds of different possibilities, feeling and the breath, and the quality of our energy. And whatever mood or temperament of your heart, and the content and energy and quality of the thinking mind, and just having that direct and immediate experience of it, just as it is, just those sensations. And they're all considered a kind of sensation, pleasant, unpleasant. Now, I'd like you to notice in that thinking mind of yours if you have a story about what you're experiencing. Or maybe you've noticed a story coming up throughout the day. Did you get hooked into some past and future in your story? Now, if it today has felt good or you feel really good right now, really happy and peaceful and relaxed, then your story might be, this is a great retreat and I'm doing really good and I'm coming back next year. Actually, maybe I'll move to Land of Medicine Buddha. Maybe I'll quit my job and just practice. And I'm so proud of myself because my last retreat was terrible. And then if today, right now, is feeling pretty uncomfortable for some reason, and drowsiness or achiness, you might say, oh God, this is awful. This might be your story. I thought I'd feel really happy and peaceful. Isn't that what it's supposed to be? And, you know, I can't stand it. I'm going to explode. And maybe it's those teachers don't really know what they're talking about. Maybe I've got the swine flu. So we have we take what our experience, our direct, immediate, simple experience, and we create a story that often reaches out into the future and is based on something in the past. So I want you to see if right now you may not have a story, but if you have an experience and you have a story about being a good meditator, good retreat, bad retreat, whatever it might be, good day, bad day, can you distinguish, can you separate, can you discern the difference between just the immediate experience and your story about the experience? And this is an essential and crucial discernment to learn to make. And if you go away from this retreat having refined this discernment, being able to tell the difference between the living, breathing, immediate, direct, full experience of now versus your interpretation, your story, your plan, your identity around it. If you can discern those, you've learned a lot. And what if you don't create a story of good or bad, but it's just this? Whatever this is for you, it's just this. As Sumedha says, just like this. That's all. So again, if you are struggling a bit with the difficulties, the classic, universal almost, challenges of the first day or few days of retreat, please don't take it personally. It's a kind of adjusting, a discharge, a kind of culture shock. And don't worry about it. And the Dharma lesson is, nothing lasts and it will change. I'd actually like to share one other little thing about our mind's story-making capacity. This is from the book, My Stroke of Insight. And many of you may know this book by Jill Bolte Taylor. And as many of you may know, she had a severe stroke that knocked out much of her left hemisphere. And one of the things that got knocked out in her stroke, which is an interesting thing, which you probably might envy at this moment, is the part of the brain that creates all the stories, all the mind chatter. So she was left with a silent mind, which she found actually quite blissful. But she began to watch as that part of the brain healed and started to come back online, as she says. She says, as my left brain language centers recovered and became functional again, I spent a lot of time observing how my storyteller would draw conclusions based upon minimal information. For the longest time, I found these antics of my storyteller to be rather comical. And I invite you to take that same attitude. At least until I realized that my left mind full-heartedly expected the rest of my brain to believe the stories it was making up. Throughout the resurrection of my left brain's character and skills, it has been extremely important that I retain the understanding that my left brain is doing the best job it can with the information it has. I need to remember, however, that there is an enormous gap between what I think what I actually know and what I think I know. I learned that I need to be very wary of my storyteller's potential for stirring up drama and trauma. So you might observe that during the retreat as well. Okay, next part of the talk. I had a teacher that once gave me the instruction before I left on a one-month wilderness, solo wilderness retreat. He said, approach your practice like you are tending a beautiful garden. Approach your practice like you are tending a beautiful garden. You know, us teachers up here, in some ways are like master gardeners. So I'm going to play with this metaphor for a while, and hopefully I don't go too overboard with the metaphor. But the teachers up here are a bit like master gardeners, and you all are newer gardeners with a variety of experience. And some of you need guided on, a lot of the different steps. It seems new. This gardening seems confusing. You can't tell the tools apart. You're not sure which tool to use when. How much do you water? How often? And so forth. And then other of you only need to occasionally ask a question when something perhaps a little different, something you haven't come across, comes up. So consider, when you plant a garden, when you're working in a garden, tending a garden, do you personally command the plants to grow? Like, now it's time to bud, or the sun's out and it's going to be out soon and you've got to start to photosynthesize. Or maybe I expect you to grow this high by next week. Do you do that in your practice in some way? So we know in gardening that that is not our job, to command, to tell the plant how to grow, to have expectations on it and demand that it meet those expectations. You can't make the growing happen. You can't force the growing. Again, people, gardening and practice takes a lot of effort. And what we need to really understand is what we're putting effort to and what effort is sometimes we put towards things that we can't actually have control over. And that is actually not very helpful. Again, do we put effort into pulling on the leaves? Do we put effort into the flower bud is there and we kind of try to pry it open a little bit? Our evolution and our transformation, our process here, this process of awakening, is something much larger than who we are and something in a very essential level way beyond our control. It is a completely natural process. It's a process of the universe, not of your personality. It's this awakening is not something that we do. So what is our job in gardening? What is our job in practice? Well, it's to provide the best conditions in gardening, to provide the best conditions that allow the plants to grow, to nourish, to blossom, to fruit, to allow the plant to realize itself, you might say, to support and nourish. You do what you can. You do all of those things. You support and nourish, you create the condition, and then it is out of your hands. Then you let go. Then you let it be. Then you let it happen. One of my favorite sayings that comes from some Zen master, I'm not sure who, he said that enlightenment is an accident and meditation makes you accident prone. So all we can do is create the conditions. Where either you might use the metaphor the things will grow or the accident will happen. But it is somewhat way beyond what we can do. And we often forget in this process, we're so oriented towards our individual self, our individual efficacy, our individual effort, our control, and trying to force and trying to make things according to our ideas, that we do forget that there are larger forces at work. And our job is to be in harmony with these larger forces, with these natural laws. There is a Native American saying that goes, "Sometimes I go about in pity for myself, and all the while a great wind is bearing me across the sky." It is this great wind that is bearing us across the sky that we need to surrender to, that we need to remember is at our back and is allowing us to awaken and transform. Now, part of the Master Gardener's role up here is to assure you that even when your fields look barren and lifeless, and like a big field of just brown dirt, which is maybe how some of you feel today, to have our job is to assure you that indeed things will grow. And while you might be exhausted from the back-breaking and knee-straining work of meditation or gardening, and you may feel you're just plugging along, hoeing and weeding and planting seeds, and that there's more seeds and always more weeds and more seeds and more weeds, and that sometimes you're covered in manure, that it's our job to, again, remind you that your efforts are worthwhile, that they're important, and that there is a whole process that is going on that you can't see yet. So how do we support and nourish our practice? How do we support and nourish a garden? Well, one way, in the garden we plant seeds and seedlings. And in terms of our practice, we're always planting seeds. We're always planting different kinds of seeds. So our intention and our understanding of what kind of seeds we are planting is very important. So being clear about our intention, our attitudes, and our very behavior, what's called sila, are the precepts that we talked about. All of these are kind of planting seeds and creating the fertile ground as well for the practice to take hold, for the roots of the new shoots to be nourished. And we weed and we remove pests in the form of working with our hindrances and the obstacles that come up. We may need to do a little pruning of letting go of certain habits or certain behaviors, certain activities, things that are no longer helpful for to us, and allow ourselves to concentrate our energy. We may need to water and fertilize, or bringing great love and kindness to the practice. We may need to make sure we're getting lots of sun in terms of receiving teachings, understanding the path and the Dharma. We may need to treat disease by healing our wounds, the wounds that perhaps get in our way sometimes of seeing who we really are. And practice like gardening is very repetitive work. And you do things over and over and over again. I was thinking about, I used to be a very avid vegetable gardener when I lived in Massachusetts. And we grew a lot of garlic, and we grew a lot of everything, but the one of the characteristics of garlic is if you take the cloves, like you know somebody else who you buy some at the store, the cloves of the garlic, and you plant each one, the first season it comes up, the garlic is going to be small. So you take those cloves and you plant them the next year. And the next year the garlic's a little bigger. You take those cloves and you plant them again. And the next year the garlic head is even bigger. And it's something about the garlic is adjusting to your environment, is adjusting to the nutrients, is adjusting to the place it's in. So in a way, I was thinking of our retreats, going to retreats is kind of like that. We plant our little garlic clove, and then it produces more and more over the years, over the retreats, the garlic clove of our being is getting bigger and sweeter and more fragrant over time. I hope you like garlic, I do. So what are we growing in this beautiful garden of our practice? Well, we're not growing a different or better or new improved you. That's not the idea of what we're growing here. What's blossoming is the ability to see who and what we really are. The ability to see who and what we really are. ability to see what is actually happening. What's blossoming and growing and being nurtured is the sprout of recognition, of truth, the sprout of full awareness, the sprout of freedom and the unobstructed heart. What's growing is our ability to see how we cause ourselves to suffer and how we can let go of that. What's growing is our capacity for peace. For resting in the here and now. For no longer struggling with what actually is. And as these grow stronger and stronger, they grow and they break through our confusion, our misunderstanding, our delusions. So that the fullness of our true being can be expressed and seen and felt and shared. So again, I would like you to reflect right now on your own ability. What does it mean for you to practice as if you're tending a beautiful garden? Do you bring that kind of care, that kind of attention, that kind of belief in the beauty of the garden? Do you bring the belief in the fertility, the vitality of the garden? So what else supports us to tend our garden, our beautiful garden of practice, a beautiful garden of who we really are? What qualities? Well, there are many, but two I want to just mention is the quality of love and the appreciation of mystery. So this practice that we're doing really needs to be a labor of love. And those of you who garden know what that kind of labor of love is. And can you bring that to every sitting, to your walking, to when your mind is full of weeds, or the when the mind has beautiful blossoms on it? Can you bring a sense of love to the gardener and the garden? Sense of love to the love of the possibility, love of the little sprouts and the seeds and the plants, an awareness that you can't handle them roughly and carelessly, and yet I see many of us do. We treat ourselves roughly and carelessly. And bring to yourself that same tenderness to a new seedling. Bring that same tenderness to yourself, as we are both equally vulnerable. To succeed in gardening, you must love the process of gardening and not just wait for the results. Otherwise, you won't last. You won't be able to maintain your garden. Can you love every step of the way, even when it's hard and sometimes when it's quite delightful. This is from Anna Quinlan. It is so easy to waste our lives, our days, our hours, our minutes. It is so easy to take for granted the color of the azaleas, the sheen of the limestone on Fifth Avenue, the color of our kids' eyes, the way the melody in a symphony rises and falls and disappears and rises again. It's so easy to exist instead of live. I learned to live many years ago. Something really, really bad happened to me. Something that changed my life in ways that, if I had my druthers, it would never have changed at all. And what I learned from it is what today seems to be the hardest lesson of all. I learned to love the journey, not the destination. I learned that it is not a dress rehearsal and that today is the only guarantee you get. I would refine that to right now is the only guarantee you get. So I invite you to bring a love of this journey. The whole journey, the ups and the downs, a love of this process, a love of yourself and what you've been given in terms of your personality, your body, your circumstances. And you might even think about all the other gardeners tending their own gardens here as well. This is from Dostoevsky. Love the animals, love the plants, love everything. If you love everything, you will receive the divine mystery in things. Once you perceive it, you will begin to comprehend it better every day, and you will come at last to love the whole world with an all-embracing love. This really is a garden of love that you are tending. And this process that we're in is a mystery. And the more we can appreciate the mystery of your own path and its unfolding, the more you can release your own personal agenda and realize there's something a lot bigger going on here and begin to relax into it and trust it and let it change you. We need to begin to let go of all our small ideas about what we think life is really about and begin to actually open to the experience of it. This is from Martha Graham. There is a vitality, a life force, an energy, a quickening that is translated through you into action. And because there is only one of you in all time, this expression is unique. And if you block it, it will never exist through any other medium and will be lost. The world will not have it. It is not your business to determine how good it is or how valuable or how it compares to other expressions. It is your business to keep the channel open. You do not even have to believe in yourself or your work. You have to keep open and aware directly to the urges that activate you. Keep the channel open. So again, in this place, on retreat and sharing this together, is this wonderful opportunity to explore the mystery of who you are, the mystery of your life, the mystery of nature, the mystery of being an existent being in this realm. And as much as possible to not jump to conclusions, to not settle for an answer. But instead to be inspired by the possibility. Of the discovery of who and what you really are. This is from James Bugenthal, transpersonal psychologist. It's from a piece called Seek a Wild God. They have said that God is dead, and it may be so, but I believe that the God who is dead is the God in the cage, the zoo God. We thought to contain the zoo God by our definitions, our interpretations, our inventions, our divine laws. That God whom we sought to capture and domesticate in our intellectual zoo of exotic concepts, that God has not thrived in captivity, and that God has died. But the wild God, the God that cannot be captured by our wills and intellects, the wild God who will not be domesticated, is as alive and as free as ever. He moves in the wind, she sings in the silences of the desert. It nourishes us in the sun. For the wild God comes upon us in ways we cannot predict and in forms we do not expect. The wild God is more than the God of evolution. The wild God breathes revolution as well. The wild God is the God of mystery. If we seek the wild God, we must go out into the world, out into the dangers and opportunities, go without a map, without a compass, without enough food, protection, anything. As we seek the wild God, we may be captured by him. For mystery comprehends us. We do not comprehend it. So I'll end this talk with one more quote. And this is from Tulopa, a very famous Tibetan teacher of many centuries ago. At first, the meditator feels like his mind is tumbling like a river falling through a gorge. In mid-course, it flows slowly like the gentle meandering river's Ganges. And finally, the river becomes one with a great vast ocean, where the lights of yourself and the lights of the ground of being merge and become one. So let's just sit quietly for a few moments together. So we have some time for...
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.